Before we get started, a brief reminder that any and all opinions and views shared by hosts and guests on this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Primal Kitchen or its affiliates or parent company.
What values do you put forth with your kids?
I do like this work hard, play harder, be kind. I would like prefer to have kids who are asking questions, pushing back when things don't make sense, like kind of exerting their own personal agency, if you will. I think we've gone like a little far in this like gentle parenting. I see these like memes on Instagram where it'll be like, mom parenting in 2024, and she's like, oh, and tell me your feelings and let's talk more about your feelings. I feel like we've almost gone like a little too far, and sometimes it can be a little too much that way, right? So we're definitely more in like the loosey-goosey, lackadaisical, like non-militant parenting style. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Primal Kitchen Podcast. I'm here as your host, Morgan Zanotti, co-founder and president of Primal Kitchen, and I have a very special guest today, my longtime therapist, my dad's therapist, the man who married me and my husband, David Rodehouse. He is, I'll just say, therapist to a lot of famous entrepreneurs, high achievers, et cetera. We've known each other for, gosh, David, it's been, what, like 15 years now, I think?
Between 15 and 20.
Between 15 and 20, I'm getting up there. But we're doing a special episode today where I'm actually going to be going into a format that's, you know, a little bit more, I would say, maybe how David and I normally communicate, which is where David actually has the microphone. So he's going to be asking me questions. I have no idea what to expect. So we're going to go on this journey together. So listen in and you can experience kind of like a session with David and maybe get a little bit more insight into me and my entrepreneurial journey with Primal Kitchen. But I'm just as clueless as you are. So stay tuned. All right, David, the mic is yours. I'll turn it over to you. Have at it.
Well, it's nice to see you, Morgan.
You too, as always.
So, how did you come to have this podcast?
That's a great question. So we have had a podcast at Primal Kitchen forever. It was actually a Primal Blueprint podcast. And I got asked for a marketing event to interview Bethany Hamilton, not for our podcast, I don't remember if it was like a health summit or something. And Bethany Hamilton is the professional surfer who had suffered that shark attack. There's a movie about her life, but she lost an arm in a shark attack in Hawaii, and she's a super amazing human being. So I did the interview with Bethany and just like loved it so much that I actually raised my hand to take over as host of the Primal Kitchen podcast. So
good. And you've been doing that for what, like a year and a half or 2 years
now? You know, I did the Bethany podcast from a rental house in Michigan that we were living there during COVID, like staying close to my in-laws. So that was, uh-huh. It was like early COVID, like, you know, the fall, the first fall. So it was that 2020. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And then I took over, probably it took like maybe 6 to 9 months after that. Then I started interviewing people for the Primal Kitchen podcast.
Do you like it?
I love it. It's like, so fun. Yeah, it's great. It's my favorite part of my job that isn't really like, wasn't in my original job description. Let's just put it that way. It's a blast.
Did you ever do anything like this earlier in your lifetime?
No. Did you perform
in theater or?
No.
Anything like that?
No theater. No, nothing like that. I used to tell people I wanted, when people asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, when I was in like grade school, I would say I wanted to be a anchor woman. I wanted to be like an anchor woman on the news, which is ironic because I don't listen to the news at all. But so I don't know, maybe I had a desire at an early age, but definitely didn't pursue anything relating to the desire until kind of I just stepped into this.
What was the most outstanding thing about your early age?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think I'm very small. Like people listening might not know this, but I'm only 5 feet tall. So I think people always assumed I was a lot younger than I was. And I was very verbal and talked a lot at a young age. So I think there's maybe a certain level of confidence that came because I was mistakenly like, people would be like, oh, she's so smart. And my parents were like, no, she's actually just 5 and you think she's 3, right? Like, I think there was maybe, you know, oh, she's so verbal or she's so outgoing. So I think maybe my like size, honestly, like kind of brought a little bit of like uniqueness and spunk to the personality that maybe wouldn't be there if I would have been of average height. I don't know. I think there's something there. And then, you know this, but I did go to camp for 8 weeks when I was 8 years old. And I think that was like a very transformative event in my life for sure. Just the camp experience. And it was like, you know, we woke up to Reveille and went to bed with taps. And it was kind of like based in a lot of these like sleepover summer camps based in like almost like military fundamentals, but very much like leadership. And, you know, I was one of the earliest people voted into our camp council, like the whole camp votes for if you get a little star or a little flame. And I got a little star at like an incredibly young age and was voted into like a, you know, you don't raise your hand for this. It's not like something you say you want to do. It was more something the camp just goes through the whole list of everyone at the camp and votes people in the list. But I just, yeah, I think those were two kind of transformative things that I remember from my childhood.
So that was the first of a whole steady line of achievements.
I guess, yeah. But it wasn't really like a steady line. You know this.
Right.
It's more like a little bit of a zigzag, right? I mean, I wasn't like, I was not a high achiever among my peer set, like in high school or in college. I mean, school was always kind of easy for me, but my parents were like, C's get degrees. There wasn't like, I didn't have a ton of academic pressure. I had some good semesters in college, and I had one semester where we blew off finals and we went to Estes Park for the day, and I didn't end the semester well. Like, I don't think I was necessarily like a high achiever, you know. I went to University of Colorado. I don't know. Yeah.
Cole, you majored in accounting.
I did major in accounting. Yeah. I went in as a psych major, David. I don't know if you ever knew that, but I went in as a psychology major and then saw how much science I had to take and switched to the business school. Math was always super easy for me growing up. I think it just came naturally to me. So I switched into accounting and graduated with an accounting degree, which also surprises a lot of people.
Well, it would seem that what you're doing now is the furthest thing from accounting.
Yes, very much so. Yes and no, right? I think yes, but also I was an accountant for 9 months after college and I quit to go be a waitress at Coons Franklin Lodge, my aunt and uncle's summer resort in northern Wisconsin. But I think I have a general respect for like a profit and loss statement and just like the numerical workings behind a business. And that served me well in entrepreneurship later. And I don't know if that would have I think that was inherently there for me, but definitely was fostered through sort of that like discipline of study, if you will.
I can see that. How might that have contributed to your creativity?
I think it gave me confidence. I don't know that it contributed to my creativity, but it definitely gave me confidence in like jobs. Like for instance, I was a account executive at an advertising agency. I feel like everything I've done, I had no business doing. So I'll just say that. Like I got a job as a recruiter and I actually took it. And then I took it because they gave you a BlackBerry. This is my first job after college. I took this job because they gave you a BlackBerry and this is 2006, 2007, something like that. And I did it for like 3 days and called the accounting firm that had offered me a job that I had turned down and said, I think I made a mistake. Did you fill the position? And they were like, no. And I quit the recruiting job after 3 days and took the accounting job. Right. And then after that, like a friend of mine was doing research for this political author and she didn't want to do it anymore. And I was like, I'll do it. And so she introduced me to him and that led to me being like the first naming the acknowledgments in 5 New York Times bestselling books. And I made, you know, maybe 12 grand a year, but it enabled me to move to South America for 2.5 years and live off of 8 grand a year, come home at 25 and I have $4,000 in the bank. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm 25. My friends have these, you know, corporate serious jobs in downtown Chicago and they're in like tens of thousands of dollars of debt because they're spending $100 every night they go out at the bars in downtown Chicago, right? So I think I had no business. I had no business being a research person. I had no business starting a podcast. I got a job at an advertising agency. I had no business getting a job at, right? I have no marketing degree. But I interviewed well, I met with them and then I really like dug in and kind of made it my own. That's like right around the time I actually started working with you. And then I took a job as a director of marketing for a high growth CPG, consumer packaged goods startup called Kavita, a beverage business in California. I had no business doing that. And then Mark brought me in at Primal Kitchen before, you know, a couple years before we launched our first product. And I grew into this, you know, CEO, president, co-founder role that I also had no business really doing, right? So I feel like my life has kind of been thus far an exercise in maybe saying yes to things I really, you know, wasn't on paper ready for.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to have served you.
It has. It has. It's been good.
I remember when you were working in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
That was a while ago.
Yeah. And I remember distinctly, David, at that point in time, I had no business getting that job, right? But I dug in and I managed this big account for us. And I remember I hadn't had a raise in a while. And I was probably I was managing the biggest account, but one of the least paid employees at the accounting firm. And I remember talking to you about it. And you were like, you need to go in and ask for a raise. And I was like, I just don't think I can do that. And you're like, no, you need to do that. So I like printed out I printed out like a Microsoft Word document with my bullet points on like why I needed a raise. I was so nervous. I was like shaking and sweating. I went in, you know, I asked for the raise. And my boss was like, yeah, of course. Like, yeah, we'll take care of it. Like you deserve a raise, you know, check that box. But it was something that I like agonized over for months, you know, and then you have that kind of difficult conversation. And then the next difficult conversation becomes easier. But that I distinctly remember you pushing me to go in and ask for a raise.
because you were really quite obviously showing a lot of value that you yourself weren't connecting with.
Yeah. Young women don't have a necessarily easy time asking to be compensated for our worth. I'll just throw that out there. That is not something that comes easy, I've found, in most like women I mentor or anything like that. It seems to be like a little bit of a, I've had people ask me for raises before and they'll be like, hey, so, you know, my rent went up and I have student loans. And I'm like, time out, stop right there. Like, if you are worthy of a raise, it's because it's tied to the work you're doing. And you need to come in and say, like, here's the work I'm doing. I'm kicking ass at work and I need to be compensated for it. Like, you don't have to fall back on this, you know, exterior. I don't know. I just always thought that was like funny, but I have had a few of those kind of experiences since then. And I've used them as like teaching moments, like, listen, step into your worth, ask for it. You know, this is fine for me, but I just want you to carry that forward into the next role.
So I suspect you're really a good mentor with these younger women.
Just
from your own experience.
I love talking to founders of specifically like food, beverage, beauty, like CPG companies. That's kind of like my sweet spot. A lot of people helped me. You know, I had a lot of help. I was calling a lot of people for free favors and free advice and help me out. I don't know what I'm doing. So it's fun to pay that forward.
Where did you get your marketing talent?
I think just passion and I think just industry passion and like it's more driven by like curiosity and obsession in the field I'm in. I don't think I have marketing talent in the sense that if you went and put me in, you know, like my dad owns a financial advising firm, right? Like, I don't think if you went and put me in a marketing role in a financial advising firm, I would be able to do anything with that. Maybe, you know, some creativity innate, but I think it's more like a kind of maybe even back to my researching days. Like when I dive in really deep and I'm like a information seeking, just super curious person. So a lot of marketing comes from watching what people are doing in other industries and just being like passionate and really knowing your consumer and your industry. And I think being so immersed in this health and wellness space for so long and having kind of just like world experience and watching what everyone's been doing and really knowing the space, I think that like allows for good marketing and maybe makes up for my lack of marketing training. But marketing training nowadays, like by the time you graduate college, the whole world's changed anyway. So yeah. You kind of just got to dive in, I think.
Uh-huh. I would agree with that.
I did have a lot of package design experience at the advertising agency, specifically in food, that translated really well for me when I went over to Primal Kitchen. We did a lot of that for Frito-Lay. And then I was able to do all of our package and a lot of our like graphic stuff and social media stuff. I just did in-house for super, you know, it was super economical. I meet founders who, you know, have spent, they're doing, I don't know, under $20 million in revenue. And they'll tell me they went and spent like $500,000. And like, no joke. I had one friend tell me he spent $500,000 on a rebrand of, and that's like crazy to me. I mean, you could do that work for $5,000. Like that's the biggest waste of money I've ever heard in my life. So yeah, I think definitely I had some good training there. And I think being on the agency side, you learn how just inefficient agencies are and maybe how you're better off doing some stuff yourself in-house. So I definitely carried some of that forward.
How did you come to meet your future business partner, Amar?
Yeah. So I was running marketing for Kavita. I had moved out to California after I lived in South America in my late 20s. I was running marketing for Kavita, and I knew who Mark was because I felt he had a blog at the time, Mark's Daily Apple. We still have the blog today, but and I knew who he was. And Kavita was headquartered in Oxnard, California. And every year Mark would do this thing, this like primal retreat. In that same area. And Kavita sponsored the event. So we were just dropping off some drinks from like all the participants of this retreat to enjoy as like a promotional thing for Kavita. And I had a marketing manager who could have gone to the event, but I wanted to meet Mark. So I went to the event specifically to meet Mark. This is 2 years before we launched Primal Kitchen. And I hit it off with Mark and his wife, Carrie. I ended up giving them a ride home to their hotel at the end of the event. The event was like at a house they had rented out, and we were all kind of like eating there and playing Ultimate Frisbee in the backyard and doing like running around barefoot and doing cold plunges. This is like the peak of kind of the paleo movement. And yeah, at the end of the night, they were like, oh, we're going to head back to their hotel. And I was like, oh, I'm driving that way. I'll drop you guys off. And then I kind of said my goodbyes. I quit Kavita. I had no job lined up. I was on a surf trip with Adam, my now husband, from San Francisco to San Diego. We were living in like a juicy van. This is converted vans you can rent in California. They're awesome. They're like a minivan, but it has like a Yakima top carrier bed on the top. Anyway, I was on that trip and Mark called, I don't know, a couple months later, that like it was maybe September, and said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about launching this food company. I'm wondering if you can help. So I met with him at his house in Malibu a week after that. And in our first meeting, he said, yeah, I think I'm going to call it Primal Blueprint. That's the name of his book. And I was like, no, that's a bad name for a food company. You should call it like Primal Kitchen or something like that. And then he's like, oh, this meeting was worthwhile. And we ended up, you know, renaming the brand. And I was like, yeah, asshole, this meeting was worthwhile before I suggested that. But Mark is like, you know, one of my best friends to this day. I always like tease him about this story. But yeah. And then I just came on as a consultant for $50 an hour. I knew I wanted to be around thought leading people like Mark. And so for me, the value wasn't like, oh, I need to make a living off this contract agreement. I was like, oh, I want to know more about what this guy's doing. This is really innovative and cool. And then I came on full time about 4 months before we launched the mayonnaise and did all the launch things, did all the package design, managed the co-mans, hired our team, grew it to $50 million, and sold it to Kraft Heinz for $200 million 3.5 years later.
Well, that really describes you as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think I would. But you know what, David? I think I struggle with, besides just general imposter syndrome, but like, I think I've been... There is an element of risk associated with entrepreneurship, right? And for me, I was in a de-risk situation. Mark had, I mean, I guess I took a risk. I could have, you know, taken a corporate job that had a steady paycheck and was, you know, when I started working for Mark, I didn't even have a job. I was consulting for a few people and running out my bedroom on Airbnb and sleeping at Adam's house. True story. But I think I am an entrepreneur, but I haven't really like done my own thing. So I think I'm like insecure always about am I just a really good, you know, number two, like to run the whole thing and the first employee? And, you know, I've done that. I can do that well. But like, you know, I haven't put my own thing out in the world. I put a lot of myself in Primal Kitchen. I mean, you know, for sure. But yeah. Well, I mean, the brand would look significantly different if I wouldn't have been there. I'm not discrediting that, but, you know, there is a little bit of that.
Well, the game's not over.
Yeah, the game's not over. It's true. It's very much not. I'm only 39.
So how did you meet your husband, Adam?
So I was living, I moved to California like on a whim. I had never been here before. I came to visit and decided I was moving like 3 months later. And I got a roommate on Craigslist with this guy, Eddie from England, who's hilarious. So I moved to Hermosa Beach. I came out, I surfed once. I fell in love with LA and with specifically this beach community of LA, Manhattan, Hermosa Beach. And Eddie, like one Saturday I'd gone to surf and Eddie was like, hey, we're going to play volleyball. Like if you want to come down, some friends are going to be on the beach. I was like, I'm going surfing. I'll see. Maybe I'll meet up with you later. So I went and surfed at El Porto. I came back. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't like, they're probably wrapping up soon. I don't know if I'll go. And then I was like, oh, screw it. I'll go down. So I ended up meeting one of my best friends still today, but this friend, Amber, and her husband went to the Air Force Academy with Adam, where Adam played football in college. So through Amber, a couple weeks later, I ended up meeting Adam. But I always think about it, I almost, you know, didn't go to the beach to meet Amber and how different my life would look if I didn't, you know, say yes to... Yeah. Kind of like an inconvenient, you know, you're late. You could easily just stay home, scroll social media or something. But I went, met the people, say yes to the things. Look where it leaves you. Three boys later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good karma.
It is. Yeah.
So now, as a mother of three boys, how is that affecting your career?
I think like you're just perspective changes, right? And I do think you're, look, I like quit so many jobs in my 20s without anything lined up. And you're kind of like, you're definitely just feel a little bit different as far as priorities, perspective, and maybe your willingness to take risks, I think, changes. Mm. I mean, the first year of Primal Kitchen, I worked, like, I remember days waking up in my pajamas, not getting dressed, not brushing my teeth. Adam would leave to go to work. He'd come home at like 8 and I would still be in my pajamas because I just hadn't even stopped to like eat a meal the whole day. Like there were a lot of those days the first year. And like, I don't have those days in me now as a mom of three. Like those days aren't, that's not happening for me right now, right? I have no interest in that. You know, I probably could have worked a little smarter and maybe not so hard, but I figured it out as time went on. So I think that changes. And I think a lot of our identity, maybe it's like a cultural American thing, I don't know, is tied up in like what we do. But once you become a mom, like I just think so much more of my identity is tied up in being a mom than it is in my job. So, you know, I remember like, you know, people, you know, selling Primal Kitchen for $200 million is a big accomplishment that's very like externally validated. Like, you know, it's in the news, people who I hadn't heard from in 20 years reached out to say like, congrats, wow, this is so cool. You know, there's that. But I remember having this moment, I was on a walk with like one of the kids and someone was like, oh my gosh, like, look at, you know, I was talking to some older couple and they were like, oh, so cute. And I'm like, yeah. And there's two more at home. And I just remember feeling like so proud to have created three humans, like so much more proud than you are even the Primal Kitchen thing. Like the Primal Kitchen thing, like it's amazing. Don't get me wrong, right? But you have the moment and then you're kind of like, okay, what's the next thing? Or, you know, the moment wears off, but the kid thing, you're kind of like always, you continuously just become more and more proud and identified with. So I think those are like some of the big changes.
So you're really loving being a mom.
I am. I'm loving being a mom. I carry around a lot of mom guilt. You know, it's the whole gamut of emotions. I'm loving being a mom, you know, 70% of the time, 30% of the time. I'm like, oh my God, this is really overwhelming having three kids under 5. It's definitely it's a roller coaster, but yeah, I'm loving being a mom.
How are you keeping up your relationship with Adam?
That's a good question. We have weekly date night, so we didn't seek, like everyone says, schedule it out. Our nanny actually just asked if she could start late on Tuesdays, so we have her stay late on Tuesdays. So she almost kind of created our date night for us. So I think advice I would have is like be a little more proactive about that. It worked out for us, but it wasn't even like we didn't initiate it. And there were times like last year when the youngest was 9 months old and I was exhausted where I wouldn't even want to go out to dinner. Like we have a nanny at our house. I'm like, I don't even know if I have the energy, but you're just like, okay, she's here. Like I'm going to shower and actually make it out of the house. So I think that helps a lot. I like stopped reading self-help books and read a tremendous amount of romance novels now, which, you know, and I think that is like the greatest thing for any mom. Romance novels are like booming, by the way. This genre is like laughed upon, but very much resonating with perhaps it's women my age, perhaps it's women of all age. I don't know. But I think that's like a great life hack. Like you hit 40, you've had the kids. Like in my 20s, I was so just like, what am I doing? You remember, that's when I started working with you. I don't belong anywhere. I need to find this guru or I need to get this certification or I need, you know, it's just so much like lamenting over who you're supposed to be. And now I'm like, I don't even want to read a, I don't even want to read a parenting book, which shocks me. Like I thought I would be the mom who would be like, and I am in some, but I've let go a lot of that. But the more kids you have, you let go of like trying to be a better parent and you're just kind of trying to survive, which I think is actually probably healthy as a parent. But yeah, letting go of that and just like reading smutty romance novels for fun has been a great upgrade for the relationship. I'll just leave it at that. I'm like loving that. And then I think, what?
Go ahead.
Oh yeah. No, I don't know. I think just making sure we got away for the first time since Riker was 10 months old. Like we left together, the kids for one night and like, we need to do more of that kind of stuff. You know, you got to like put the effort into, you know, schedule it and make all that.
Yeah. It doesn't come very naturally because of the exhaustion.
Yeah. And it's hard to leave your kids. Like I know all my mom friends are like, we're going away. I'm doing a girls trip for my 40th birthday. We're going surfing for like 4 days in Mexico. And we had this huge debate. Like, should we go 4 nights or 3 nights? Like for these mom, me and my mom friends, it was like such a big deal to think about being away for 4 nights. And then, you know, we booked the 4 nights and my husband was gone the other weekend for 4 nights. He didn't even like think, I don't even think he thought twice about it. Right. And I was like, why are we doing this to ourselves? Like, it's, you know, it's fine to take the me time to go, but it is, you know, it is, it's a whole system running over here at the house. So it is hard to step away. You know, I know like I, sometimes when I leave for work trips, I'm like, okay, I packed their lunches for tomorrow. There's baked oatmeal in the fridge for breakfast. Dinner's cooked for tomorrow night. You know, the kids are bathed. I set up this, this, and this. And then I'm like, what am I doing? Like I have a, you know, a stay-at-home dad husband who's like incredibly competent at managing the kids on his own. But I don't know if it's just moms, we just put this on ourselves, but it's definitely a thing. Yeah.
Do you feel like you've grown up?
Yeah, definitely.
What do you think triggers that feeling? For you,
grown up in what, like in just in general, are you asking?
Well, in looking back at your teens and 20s and even,
Oh my God. Yeah. I feel like in college, I remember dating people and being like asking other people like, well, do you like him? Like, what do you think of him? Like, that's like, so to me, just like, oh my God, you're so 20 years old. You're like, you're 18 years old, right? Or 17. You're like more concerned about what other people think than you are about knowing what you think yourselves. I was out to dinner with some of my friends earlier this week. And one of my friends was saying that she's like enjoying her 40s a lot more than her 30s. Because I just think every decade and every year, you just feel like you give less fucks. You're like, I actually don't care what other people think of me. And that's still really hard. But you care a little bit less and you know who your people are a little bit more and you know yourself a little bit better and things just flow easier with just more experience and more repetitions and different friendships and more friendships and all the learnings that come from all the relationships and all the tough conversations and all the things that kind of build on each other, hopefully, as we progress. Yeah.
How do you think therapy has been helpful to you?
Well, I mean, I'm a therapy junkie. I love therapy. I don't know. I think everybody should be in therapy. I mean, you knew me in my 20s. You could tell me more than anything. But I think self-awareness and just having like an outlet for learning about yourself so you're not just so in your head. But you got to have a good therapist. David, we know this, right? Like, so I think you're very much a therapist who isn't like, sit on the couch and tell me about your relationship with your dad and let's like dig up a bunch of painful stuff about your childhood. And you know, maybe some people need that and I just didn't, but I gather that's not really your style. Like you're much more, okay, what do we know about you? And I think you're very good at like knowing where me and I'm assuming most of your clients like need to push, you know, and pushing me to be like, go ask for the raise or quit the job or move to Florida or build the house or whatever other thing, you know, we've been debating, have the baby, marry. I mean, look, I wouldn't be married to Adam, right? I mean, Adam and I broke up a couple years into our relationship for one summer and I was having a great time dating. And like, you know, I think I'm a freedom seeking individual. So I was fine single. And Adam was really relentlessly pursuing me. You'll remember this summer, right? Like he was relentlessly pursuing me in our breakup. And you were like, Morgan, you might want to pay attention. Like you're kind of like, you know, on the fence on whether or not you're going to like dive back in here or not. But like, it doesn't happen very often where guys are like this relentlessly pursuing getting back together with you. Like it's been months, like he's still dropping off presents at your front door before you go to work. Like, you know, not that that's the litmus test for whatever, but it was like good to have just a second opinion who could like point out the obvious and keep you kind of going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't think I would have half the self-awareness. I don't think I would have half the confidence. I think those are the two biggest like impacts for me.
Mm-hmm. Were you raised a particular religion?
Catholic. I've always had a tough relationship with Catholicism. I don't know why, but I have.
Can you describe what that tough relationship is?
I mean, I think I remember, so, you know, I mentioned earlier that I'm really little and I looked young at a young age, right? And I remember going to get communion and I had gone through first communion. So that's third grade, right? So I was probably in fifth grade and I went up to get the communion, the wafer, and I got like rejected at the altar. Like they thought I was too young and I hadn't gone through first communion. I remember being like mortified, right? Like I'm in fifth grade, I'm standing up there and then I don't know what to do. They don't hand me the thing. I'm like so embarrassed. Like I think I walked back to the aisle and I was like crying and my parents were like, just give her, even if she's in first grade, give her the body of Christ, you know, for fuck's sake. Mm-hmm. Like, come on. Like, this is ridiculous. So I just feel like it was like that. I don't know why that story just really sticks out to me of kind of like my relationship with the Catholic religion. And I was also never a naughty person. Like, I was never a troublemaker. That just wasn't me. I'm probably more leaning towards the people pleasing side. I'm extroverted. I never had a complaint from a teacher ever in my whole life, but I was terrible in Sunday school. Like I failed my confirmation essay. They made me redo it. I picked Saint Cecilia because she was that Paul Simon song, Cecilia, You're Breaking My Heart. Like I literally picked my saint because I liked that song. She's the patron saint of music anyway. But, I was just like a clown. Like I was a class clown and I remember throwing notes at the teacher, throwing notes across the room, my best friend, Marcy. I was really poorly behaved in a Sunday school setting, which was very out of character for me. So I don't know. And I think I have a bit of a nonconformist streak that's just in me for whatever reason. My mom's a little bit of like a rebellious rule breaker. Like I think a lot of, you know, I remember my friend getting a ticket for rolling a stop sign when we were like 16. And I remember telling my mom, oh, Allison's like so upset she rolled a stop sign and she got a ticket. And my mom was like, oh, who cares? Everybody rolls a stop sign. Like, come on. If you're going to get a ticket, like get a good one, right? Like she, so I feel like that kind of, she's definitely more like rules are, you know, guidelines. They're not like, whereas Adam is much more, you know, militant. Like he's much more of a rule follower. I'm like a bit like, if it's the way it's always been done, I question it. I'm kind of like, okay, but are we just, that's just my personality. So maybe that goes hand in hand with why religion never really like settled for me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I also grew up with a, you know, you got my dad into meditation. So I grew up with a Buddhist kind of meditating, practicing father and a mother where we had Father Bowden, the, you know, my mom's side of the family, very Catholic. Like we, every holiday, Father Bowden was at the table with us. You know, he did spend holidays with our family. My grandpa like started a Catholic church in Joliet. So there was just a dichotomy, I think, even amongst the family on my dad pushed back on religion a lot. And then my mom had this kind of more traditional Catholic upbringing, but yeah.
So what are you raising your kids?
Just work hard, play harder, be kind, nice human beings. I think that's, Adam has like expressed interest into baptizing the kids. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Like, let me know when the baptism date is. And if you want to plan that, like, I'm happy to show up, but I will have like no part in encouraging this. And our kids haven't been baptized yet. So we'll see if that ever happens. But, you know, we're kind of in navigating school decisions at this point. And we looked at some Catholic schools and just like wasn't resonating for me. There's a really cute Lutheran school we applied to that, you know, we might do, but we'll probably just go public school. So no, I don't think religion will be like, it was a big positive part of Adam's upbringing. Like his dad was very, his parents were very involved and he always like has fond memories of church, like, you know, kids playing and, you know, that kind of thing. I just like, wasn't my experience. So I don't know. Yeah. We haven't done anything formal with the kids on the religion front.
Well, you're not alone.
I know.
Seems to be one of the things that's occurring throughout the culture right now. What values do you put forth with your kids?
I think I do like this, you know, work hard, play harder, be kind type of values thing. But I think curiosity, like the ability to explore whatever they're interested in, that's like a big thing for me. I would like prefer to have kids who are, you know, asking questions, pushing back when things don't make sense, like kind of exerting their own personal, I don't know, agency, if you will. I want respectable kids, though. I think we've gone like a little far in this like gentle parenting. I'm like, you know, walking this line. Like right now it's very much about, you know, I see these like memes on Instagram where it'll be like a mom parenting in 2024. And she's like, oh, and tell me your feelings and let's talk more about your feelings. And are you gonna, you know, like, so I feel like we've almost gone like a little too far. And sometimes it can be a little too much that way. Right. So we're not like we're definitely more in like the loosey goosey, like lackadaisical, like non-militant parenting style. Like we had kids in the bed, it's fine. I feel they're only going to want to cuddle with me for so long. We're fine with that. We're not a big spanking family and we abide by, we have this great preschool here we go to, and they're big on like the positive discipline book, or they teach Dr. Becky's class Good Inside. So just how do we like foster creative thinking and kindness and let kids really like figure it out on their own instead of intervening too much. And I know there's the big, like, you know, prepare the kid for the path and not the path for the kid. And I think my natural tendency is to prepare the path for the kid. Like I'm like, okay, what's the perfect school environment for them? And, you know, what's the perfect this and the perfect that? Like that is my natural tendency. It's maybe every mom's natural tendency, but I think I'm trying to like embrace the friction in childhood instead of trying to prevent the friction. And this preschool has really done a good job of like helping kind of illustrate those experiences. Like they were even talking about how we have, you know, there's one kid in Riker's class who is like pretty physically aggressive, and they like appreciate him in the class. The teachers do, because it gives the kids who are shy an opportunity to like practice saying no, you know? So they're big on like, they have a bike yard and there's no sign that says ride the bike this way. You purposely, because they want the kids to ride the bikes two different ways and then have a collision and then have to figure out how to go around the bike yard together. So we're trying to bring like, I would say, that kind of a philosophy into our parenting. I think that's like our number one goal. There's a great book, Hunt, Gather, Parent, Adam's reading right now. So we've been talking a lot about just like what's in there and, you know, being the CEO of the family and not letting the kids be the CEO of the family, but also not, you know, walking this hard line. Like, you know, that's not really our style either.
What kind of value do you place on sex in marriage?
I mean, my brother got engaged. This is so funny. You know, my brother got engaged last summer, and we were at dinner with like all my aunts and uncles and my cousins. And we were asking the day they got engaged, like, what's like the secret to a happy marriage? And I was like, sex, like hands down. Like, I think that's it. Like, I think communication, you can have like probably a successful marriage with shitty communication. I think it's really hard to have a successful marriage without sex. That's just been my experience. And it's so funny. My aunt and uncle were sitting at a different table, and they came over and we asked them, and my aunt Ann was like, sex, 100%. Like, and we kind of joke about it, but I think it's important. I think physical intimacy is important. I think it's important for like women to step into their own sexuality, which like isn't, and maybe doesn't even come naturally for me. Like that takes a little bit of effort too. Hence like the romance novels and all the other things. But yeah, I think we've noticed like in periods where we're not like physically intimate with each other, like we start to just like fight or, you know, whatever, like so much is just like smoother when that part of your marriage is like taken care of. And it's so taboo. Like, I just think we're so funny about sex in America. I know I've talked to you about this recently, but I'm just like, what is the big deal? Like, we've made such a big deal about it for like, how do we think we all got here? You know, like, I don't know. Or even just like sex when you're older, like part of me is like, God, I'm 40 now. Like probably no one wants to listen to me talk about sex, right? Like I'm too old. I've even aged out of sex at 40. I can't imagine how you feel, right? Like societally, we're like, it becomes gross, right? Like it's gross to think about older people having sex, which is to me just like so ridiculous. Like what is wrong with us, you know? So anyway, I think it's important. And I think for Adam and I, like, it's actually gotten better. Like, we're even the other night, Adam's like, God, we're so much better at this than we were like 10 years ago, right? So, you know, I think that's fun. There's like still things to learn and still things to try. And it's like a fun thing to do together, you know, that you share between the two of you or whomever else I guess you're inviting in, but, you know, mostly between the two of you, right? So, no, it's good. It's a good, important part of the marriage.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it's been very helpful in your marriage. And I suspect you have a lot of girlfriends that feel the same way.
Yeah. And, I mean, Mark's been married. He's like, Mark will be 70 in July. He and Carrie have been married for, I don't know, over, probably 30 years. And he says that would be the key too. I've heard people ask Mark that question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I turned 80 this year, and my wife is 82, and we were intimate a few days ago, and so this is really at the forefront of my mind.
And, I love it.
Odio says, you know, we are so fortunate because this just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. I'm glad you're having that at 80. Well, it's even like the Golden Bachelor, right? Like that was did you watch that show by any chance?
No.
But do you know the premise? It's like Bachelor season, but I didn't watch it, but I think everyone's like 70. But I think it's good for America to see like, hey, sex can be a part of your life when you're older, right? Like it's not like something you need to get out of your system. Like, it's terrible early in your life. Like, it's for women, there's really nowhere to go but up, I feel like. But yeah, no, it's good. It's motivating.
Is it different at 39 than it was at whatever earlier age?
I think yes, but just because like Adam and I have been together now for 12 years or something like that. So it's different because I'm in a 12-year relationship versus, and you're just better as a, the more sex you have as a woman, I think you're better at like learning what you want, asking for what you want, at least for me. Like when you're in your, it's, virginity was something I was like, can we please get this over with so I can just like not be a virgin? Like that age, this age is just, sex is terrible for women, I think mostly. I mean, maybe not terrible, but it's not like what you would later classify as good. Nobody knows what they're doing. You're figuring it out, you know.
Right.
On your, I don't know, a lot of times there's drinking involved, which also doesn't really make anything better. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, it seems that that's something that can be worked at in the relationship, cultivated.
For sure. For sure. There is interesting study that we are like physical attraction is determined a lot by pheromones that we're not aware of, right? Like, I'm sure I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but so pheromones, for those listening who don't know, is like sense that, and I've known this since I was like, I had, I don't know, I've known this since I was 25, and I feel like it's having a moment right now. But when women are on birth control, they're attracted to a different type of pheromone than they are when they're not. And so we have all these like women who are looking for partners and they're on birth control and they're attracted to like a partner that is like maybe smelling. I don't know if this isn't the, this isn't going to be the scientific description, but more or less from the studies show that like you're attracted to someone who's maybe not who you'd be attracted to in your unbirth control state. And we, I think it can be like messing with who we end up picking for life partners because our pheromones are thrown off from birth control. So for anyone listening, this is my PSA for you. The Aura Ring plus the app Natural Family Cycles is a great birth control method if you don't want to mess with your pheromones while you're looking for a partner in your mid-20s. I'm not proposing anyone go off, you know, birth control, but you should look at the Natural Cycles app paired with the Aura Ring. That's what I'm wearing. That's what we're doing now. I hate birth control, but make me feel like a crazy person. Totally, total tangent here, but I think it's fascinating. I think the pheromones are fascinating. When I got my yoga certification in Hawaii, we had a neuroscientist guy who kind of did like some modules with us on mind body connection and all this stuff. And he told us he sold pheromones in college. He like paid his way through college because he was selling pheromones, like animal, like pig pheromones or something, to guys who would like wear them topically to like attract women in college. I thought that was freaking hilarious, but now we're really off topic. Anyway, well, thank you, David. This was awesome. I appreciate you and your time and the impact you've had on me for the last, I guess, almost 2 decades. We're getting up there, man.
Yeah, I'll say. Which is great. That's great. Yeah.
No, thank you. This was awesome. It's fun to flip the mic and always fun to be in this seat in a conversation with you. So appreciate it.
Well, I want to thank you for opening up and sharing everything that you've shared today. Really wonderful to connect with you, and give my love to Adam.
I will. I will. Thank you, David.
Talk to you next time.
Okay. And for those listening, you guys can Google David Roadhouse if you want to check out him and his practice. I don't know if you're taking any new patients. Are you taking any new clients, David?
Occasionally, yes.
Occasionally. Okay. Well, if you feel like you want them to email you, droadhouse@yahoo.com. Okay. Thank you, David. Great chatting.